Welcome to Season 5 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Joris Peels and Brent Wright. We're bringing in industry experts, patients, vendors, and thought leaders to share their stories, insights, and visions for the future. Whether you're a clinician, a researcher, a vendor, or someone with a personal interest in the field, we have something for you. Join us as we delve into how advancements in personalized healthcare and 3D printing are revolutionizing the industry and changing the way we approach the design, production, and delivery of prosthetic and orthotic devices.
Hi, everyone. This is another episode of yet another podcast with the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright and Joris Peels. How are you doing, Brent?
Hey, doing well, man. Still in the RV, but okay. Everything's going well. So everything's running well and air conditioning's, you know, keeps on cranking in the heat of Atlanta, and we're going to be off to Nashville today. So looking forward to that as well.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy your tour of the surrounding states for these weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to see everything and really see the personalities of each state too. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, do you notice a lot of differences? Are you like food, people, like is it really, really very different for you?
It is, and it definitely depends on kind of the area that you go. Like the campground that we're at now has a lot of RV spots, but there's also tent camping as well. And I just cannot imagine tent camping in, you know, 100-degree heat with, you know, humidity that's super thick. That just is not my idea of fun. But you do have those types of things. So, and then like the place in Orlando was RV only, and it was more of kind of they call it a resort. So they have a pool, they have, you know, laundry facilities, all the things, right? And so you just have a different style of people that like more of the easy camping than this tent camping sort of thing. So it's just kind of interesting to see even the personalities of the campgrounds from place to place. But I think the thing that I love most about camping is everybody is, enjoying the outside. We're on a lake. You can fish, paddleboard, and, watch boats, watch the sunset, sunrise, all that stuff. And everybody is out to just enjoy and enjoy life. And I think that's neat about any of the campgrounds.
Okay, all right. I'm happy you get to experience this with your family and enjoy this little trip. It sounds really wonderful. So, first off, who's sponsoring this episode again, Brent? Who, remind us.
Oh, this one's a hard one to remember, you know. So this is Advanced 3D is the title sponsor for Season 5. Advanced 3D is a company that I co-own with Paul and Tyler, based out of Kinston, North Carolina. And the whole idea is we try to really bring awareness around what 3D printing can do, not only for your workflow, but also for patient outcomes. And that's what we want to see, is we want to see great patient outcomes, and we want to partner with those that are looking for different ways to tools in the toolbox, so to speak, different tools that you may be able to increase your patient satisfaction, comfort, and outcomes.
Okay, that sounds very good. And again, like, what would be like, are you doing parts? Are you doing certain types of parts? Or is it, you know, is it you really focus on that relationship and really helping people engineer stuff, let's say?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we want to do and where we see a big gap, and what we've heard a lot of our guests say as well, is the design side is a big gap in the orthotic and prosthetic industry. And so we really have hearts of a teacher, as far as we want to help you make good designs and therefore feel good about the products that you're going to put on the patients as well. And so we're able to share, you know, some of the knowledge that we've gleaned over the last, oh man, you know, eight, 9 years, and almost jumpstart people's journey into 3D printing. And that's the big thing, is we want people to be successful. And hey, listen, we're getting squeezed from all directions with costs and such. And if we can control, you know, what we can control, which is our material costs and how we use our time, that is almost as good as saving money as well. And so, you know, I really believe that 3D printing is part of the answer on how do we save time and money.
Okay. That sounds really good, dude. That sounds really good. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the news. So we have a news segment, and that news segment is brought to us by Gespodo. That's G-E-S-P-O-D-O, which is a kind of wizard-based, really easy kind of software tool that you can use to make your own orthotics and much else besides. And they've brought to us the news segment. And the news segment for today is, I think this is something fun. I think it's a little bit lighthearted, but I think it's a wonderful idea as well. And this is something that comes from News 12 in New Jersey. And they're talking about the Eastern Amputee Golf Association shows off the new prosthetics at the Golf Classic. So this is, I love this. And it's about the Eastern Amputee Golf Association holding its 22nd annual JFK Rehab Howard Taylor Memorial Amputee Classic. So first off, these guys have been doing this for 22 years. So I think that's wonderful. There's real value in keeping this going. And they had a couple of dozen golfers, apparently, at the Rossmore Golf Club in Monroe. And they actually get together and they raise money for scholarships for amputee members and families. So this is amputees helping amputees. So I love that as well. And I just think it's a wonderful initiative. I think it's a wonderful thing to get together and measure up, talk shop, if you will, and then get to know each other and stuff. And I just thought this is wonderful news.
Well, and I think, you know, from all the patients that we've had on the podcast, being a part of sports and athletics as an amputee is a big part of their journey, not only to recovery, but then to feeling normal. And so I think it's a really neat thing. And you know what was cool is that they had Logan Aldridge on, and he's a local guy to us from Raleigh, and he was also one of the first amputees that Peloton hired as one of their trainers. And I thought that was really neat for him to be there and share his story. I love this story of how people really overcome their quote unquote disability.
Awesome. I think we both agree there. Okay, cool. And now we have, well, this today we move along with just the episode and we don't have a guest because we were talking about, you know, what we want to discuss, what we were looking at, what episodes really popular, what we got a lot of feedback about. And we decided to go a little bit more deep into the, well, if you will, the customer journey. So we're doing a little thought experiment here. And we're saying, okay, today, if I don't know anything, I'm a orthotist, prosthetist, I don't know anything about 3D printing, what is my customer journey? What is, like, you know, where do I start? You know, because we always talk about how people started. There's a podcast, there's a lot of stories about how people started, where they started with, what tools, and how they learned. But, you know, there's no real typical path that we think, hey, you know what? That would be good practice to follow that. So that's what we're really going to be talking about today. So yeah, imagine you knew absolutely nothing, Brent, and you wanted, you're curious about this 3D printing thing. Where would you start? So first off, like, you know, are there any websites, resources, other things? There's no real definitive, right? There's no real definitive course or class or stuff really where you can start to start off with, right?
Right. And I think that's one of the interesting things is there is not kind of a definitive course. Everybody kind of finds their own way. And also there's so much fragmented within our industry. So there's so many software companies that are trying to come in to make it quote unquote easy for the clinicians. And some of them are great software packages, but there isn't just one standard way to do things. And so that's where I think stepping back and looking for a coach, a mentor, somebody that's kind of gone before is so important. And yes, while it may cost you a little bit of money up front, your time to market or to get something to 3D printing is going to be a whole lot less if you've got somebody to come alongside of you, because a lot of the work has already been done. And there's a lot of ways to get to that final product. And so I think that's what I'd love for people to understand is take a look at your current workflow. How are you working right now, whether it's traditional fabrication, some sort of hybrid thing? Take a look at what you're doing and then see if you can insert some part of a digital workflow into that. And for a lot of people, that starts with scanning. And so there are people that will do everything the normal way, take a cast, pour down the cast with plaster Paris, modify it by hand. But then they take the whole fabrication into the digital space via a scan of their positive model. And I think that's a totally a great way to do it. Because here's the thing, Joris, right now, cash flow is at a premium. And so somebody can't just say, oh, I want a 3D print and I'm going to start today, because there not only is there a learning curve, you have to keep cash flow going in these businesses. And so my thing is, when I'm looking at a business, is, okay, here's your process now. I want to make sure that you all the timing and everything that you normally have, and your time to delivery, time to getting your cash in, is kept.
But is it too much complexity too quickly? I mean, or not knowing, or what specifically trips people up?
So I think they have to bite off the whole apple.
Okay. I would like come to the same conclusion, but like start somewhere differently. I would say, like, keep it simple, stupid, right? Start with like the simplest thing you can do to actually make a product, the simplest material choice, the simplest action, the simplest thing you can do, and then grow from there. And you know, so I'd start with a different thing, but I do agree with you that people tend to, you know, want to like do all the digital stuff in one go, and then maybe that's just going to be too much. And it's also just going to be too much work for a lot of people. You know, they're just not going to have the time.
Well, and time is at such a premium, right? It's like the people are not only seeing patients, but they're trying to learn how to do the design. Then they're trying to learn how to print, where to print, all that. I was actually talking to a clinician the other day, and they said, Brent, you know, it just takes time in the saddle to learn all this stuff and some of the intricacies. There is a little bit of shortcut as far as, hey, hiring somebody to come alongside of you, having the right software, that sort of thing. But the real answer and the real key is using that thing that is so valuable, time, to gain the experience to make it happen.
Okay. And then, all right. So would you then say, I like to keep it simple, kind of get started thing, but would you say, you know, do only 3D scanning, or do 3D scanning and 3D printing, because there's synergies there? Or would you say, like, get a hold of CAD first? Is there only one of those three you would start with first? Or
so what I typically suggest for people is, hey, start scanning what you're already providing to the patients. So if you're already doing, say, hand modifying, hand pouring, all that, is scan your models and then put them into the electronic medical record for the patient. It's a great data point for you to have a history of what the patient's changes have been over time. So that's one great way to do it. And it literally costs no time, no energy, and you've got a data point that's worth something.
And there's no risk, right? The little risk, right, compared to all the stuff that you'd be doing, right?
Yeah. So all you're doing is cataloging shapes, essentially, at that point. But it's super valuable, because, like, I had a patient, it had been 2 years since I made him a socket. And he's like, hey, everything fits except the bottom part of my socket. I've just changed in shape. I've got it a little bit stronger. And so what we were able to do is make those modifications, because I had his digital file, and reprint, and we didn't have to start from scratch. It was a great option, and very low risk. And here's the other thing that's funny, you know, all those molds that are of plaster and that sort of thing, a lot of companies will choose to keep those molds for, you know, about 3 months until they end up having to throw them away or break them out, because there's just literally no more space in the building for the molds. And so being able to catalog those molds, you don't actually have to keep them for that long because you're always able to get back to where you were. And instead of, you know, taking up space in your building, you're only now taking up space, you know, wherever you choose to store it on your computer.
Okay. So it looks like you're kind of inching, like scanning first. And then, okay, of course, so there's, with scanning, there's a couple of things we need to pick apart. Like, so one is the skill of scanning. Like, so, okay, I tried to do the comb OP scanning a tool, which is an iPhone-based tool. This seems, first of all, you can try this for 10 days, right? So this is like for free. So if you don't have anything, you don't want to spend any money, this is a, you know, a chance for you to try AFOs or any kind of like scanning thing for free for 10 days and then see if this is for you. So to me, there was a bit of a scanning skill, like a physical. So first of all, that to me is a really great place to start, right? And I would recommend doing something like that over buying equipment. How about you? Would you be like that as well? Because I've seen so many people buy scanners that they don't work or they don't end up using. It's like the bread baking machine of industrial 3D printing. These people have these scanners and they don't end up actually ever doing anything with them, you know?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. The iPhone scanners have come such a long way, and now you have these phone scanners that are getting very, very accurate. And then the reality is we can still be plus or minus a half a millimeter or a millimeter, you know, and still have really great results. And so I think people think, oh, I need to have some sort of metrology level scanner, and that, while that is nice to have, it is not necessary to get started.
Okay, that's good. And then, so yeah, I definitely would try do one of these app-based ones. I like the comb one. I think it's really fun. But still, even with the comb one, it's really fun and really easy to use. You know, there's a bit of a skill. You need to be patient. You need to be in the right, you know, you need to be kind of in a very zen frame of mind to be doing this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's the movement, you know, and doing the front-facing camera and scanning, there's a little bit of like body positioning. You've got to figure that out. But man, the results that you can get are pretty great with that. And it's just a great place to start. And it's a springboard into the next section of doing some sort of design or CAD work.
Okay, because that's one thing I think, you know, people sometimes magically, so there's a skill of scanning. There's different scanners, right? So they all kind of work a little bit differently, the structured light or whatever, that kind of stuff. So that's important to know. There's some limitations of scanners. Sometimes you need to put a sock on people. Sometimes you need to put buttons all over, like little stickers all over them. So there's some specific stuff. And there's also some specific quirks. If you actually get like a hand scanner or something, there's some specific quirks, right? So if we're just talking about scanning, we've got a whole bunch of different options. There's no one scanner, one technology, one approach kind of thing. So that's also, I think, something people need to know. But the next thing I think is that, yeah, once we have that geometry scanned, we're going to have to clean it up somehow. And even with these, well, then we can either, well, there's two things. We can do kind of automated tools for that, or we could get stuck in there themselves. Would you recommend that people learn how to do it themselves a little bit at least, or?
Well, I know that you love Mesh Mixer.
Everyone loves Mesh Mixer.
And you know what? There's a lot of support for Mesh Mixer online. There's forums. YouTube is a wealth of knowledge. We had Derek Schmidt on very early on in the Orthotics Prosthetics podcast. His stuff from, if you look up Lemon Lattice on YouTube, is amazing on what you can do with Mesh Mixer. So that's where I would say you start, is Mesh Mixer. And what that does is it gives you the opportunity to modify some of the things in the way that you want. And so the tools are essentially the same almost across all the platforms of what you want to do. They just act maybe a little bit differently or labeled differently. And so if you're able to run Mesh Mixer and get results that you want, it's going to be a very lateral, easy move to move into a software that you may want. The other thing that Mesh Mixer does is it will tell you what is most important to you. Is it to save time? Is there a specific design feature that you're like, man, this thing takes forever? How to connect things together? that sort of thing, you're going to see what deficiencies you have and maybe how a paid tool will fill it. But I mean, the reality is that most of these paid tools have a learning curve to them. And, you know, before you get involved with some of the paid tools, my suggestion is learn what you can and then use the paid tools to allow you to become more efficient. The last thing that I hate to see people get into is into a long-term relationship with a, say, a paid vendor, and it's really not what they need or the tool that they need. And so I think that's a big deal, is use the free tools such as Mesh Mixer or low-cost tools such as Fusion 360. And we had Arthur Hobden on that has some education around Fusion 360, ZBrush. I don't know that he does anything in Mesh Mixer, but nonetheless, those are great options to invest in yourself and learn to do things in a digital workflow manner that then translates well when you get into the paid software.
Yeah, because like it's also important to note that if you would go into like CAD or something like Geomagic for cleaning up your scans, or these kind of automatic kind of maker orthotic type tools, you're going to be learning their environment. You're not necessarily going to be learning the engineering or making anything. You're going to be learning their workflow and their way of doing it in whatever way they see fit. And that might be wonderful for you, but that also might just be, you know, a complete different, you know, complete distraction for a lot of people, or it might just like, you know, not really teach you much, but it might be easy, but it just wouldn't let you learn as much, you know?
I think that's the case. And I also say that a lot of these packages do stifle some of the creativity that a clinician may have because the workflow is so specific, so narrow. And, you know, I think that's an important thing is, do you really want to have the creative freedom to do exactly whatever you want? And that's the beauty of learning Mesh Mixer or Freeform, is that you can literally do whatever you want, but then you can use these paid softwares to get parts of that workflow faster. And I think that's a big deal. And I think I can't stress enough that time in the saddle, you've got to prioritize that. And man, if you can and have somebody come alongside of you to help train you, show you some of the ropes and shortcuts, the road is going to be a lot easier, and you're not going to have to reinvent the wheel for yourself, because the reality is almost all of the workflow for O&P is pretty well established, and there are people out there that will kind of show you the way.
For to me, I think what's interesting is that we can look at this from a point of view of like, you can explore for exploring's sake and maybe explore too much and learn stuff that's not useful for you. But you should have kind of a more, you know, apart from just getting the basics right, you should have more of a directed exploration saying, where do I want to be an expert? Do I want to be an expert designing these prostheses, printing them? Or do I want to like outsource? I'm never going to want to do this in-house. I'm going to outsource it. Then, you know, the sooner you're able to make that decision, the sooner you know where you kind of want to play, where you want to put your effort. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that is so important, and because you can go so many different ways. And so I think you have to look at your business mix. Are you heavy prosthetics or making the prostheses? Where do you spend most of your time? And so one of the easiest kind of low-hanging fruit ways to get 3D printing into your practice is to do the check sockets. And the beauty of doing check sockets is not only are they pretty quick, but they're super cost effective and there's not a lot of waste, which is what I love. So you're talking about maybe $8 to $10 a check socket once in material cost, once you have paid for your machine. And man, there are people doing stuff on, you know, very low cost Creality or some of the Chinese machines. And while I think that's probably a great place to start, it's not really a long-term solution just because those things aren't made to run 24/7 in a commercial fashion. But so if it was me looking to get into 3D printing and I'm a prosthetic heavy practice, I'm looking at getting into test sockets because not only will my turnaround time be quick, pretty easy to modify. And then, two, my material costs are, probably less, definitely less than what I would pay to have them traditionally fabricated. And then, you don't have all the waste of the plaster and all the, even some of the labor of pouring those down, modifying them, stripping the cast, like all those things that go into that. You've got none of that. You're actually printing the device itself. And I think that's a great way to start. And like Jen talked about, with Kenny Orthopedics, that's where they really saw their return on investment on the machine. I mean, I think she said it was a matter of months when they paid back their machine, and now they're just paying material costs for these test sockets. And I think that's fantastic.
I think we should differentiate here. I think it's good to get a machine, like buy a $200 machine, just play around. So, kind of what the things are. And I completely agree with you that going to production with one of those is going to suck. But okay, let's talk about the investment here. So we're talking $200 machine. We play around with it for a couple of weeks, months, maybe just making, stuff to jigs, fixtures, stuff around the house, whatever. Right. Just so you understand the technology. And what's the next step up? Cause then I have I could outsource, right? Well, I'll be paying a lot more per check socket. But I'd be doing less work, or I could really invest. And where would you invest then? If we're really looking at like, okay, we're going to do production, where would you go?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways to go there. We've had a couple of the companies on. PVA Medical has a 3D printer, and they have kind of an ecosystem that slices, does the scanning and modification. All that stuff is all part of the ecosystem. And I think the other way to go is you're looking at a machine like a Filament Innovations machine, which is a little bit more open, but high flow. I mean, very fast. And I know you love Vase Mode style of prostheses. And it's a very specific workflow to get into the Filament Innovations Icarus machine or even their pellet lines. But Mike has done a good job of really validating a lot of those workflows. And he's got some stuff coming down the pike that's going to allow people to do some preparatory sockets and, potentially some definitive stuff in the FDM world. And I think that's pretty neat. Those machines are expensive, though. And so there's this gap, I think, that, you've got the $1,000 machines or the $200 machines, like what you see, or you can get on Amazon. And then you go up to like the $20,000, $25,000 or $30,000, $35,000 machines from Filament Innovations. There's not a machine that's like a sub $10,000 machine that's just amazing to do these things. And I think there's a lot of white space there.
Totally. I've been looking for other projects, other customers, and there just isn't. Okay, you've got like things like Ultimaker S5, S7. Those are really good machines. Generally, if you're like, if you're like, I'm in an office, I want to make prototypes, they're wonderful, right? But I think for check sockets specifically, you've got this kind of like, big build volume for us, fast for us, high flow. That's a really difficult space to find something in for like, 3 to 20K. That's really difficult. And a huge opportunity, I think, for people to make something that's available. But then, okay, so what would we be talking about if we're talking about these machines that we mentioned? We're talking like, we're talking $30,000, $50,000, right?
Yeah. And so I think you really have to look at your volume and what your return is going to be on a machine like that. You may be better off buying a bigger machine. Like Creality has like a 500 millimeter, I think it's maybe a 500 by 500 by 500 millimeter square machine that is a sub $1,000 machine. But you're going to have to do some modifications. You're going to have to work with it a little bit. But all those things are good experience, good to learn on, because here's the thing. If you buy a $30,000 machine, it's still a machine. And if you don't know how to use it then you potentially have a $30,000 paperweight, right? There's only so much that these vendors can do to get you up and going if you don't have the experience. And so that's why it's super important to have some of that experience before you make a big investment like that, because these things, in the end, you know, the guts of them are almost, they all work very similar, right? And you're going to have something that fails. You're just going to have something that troubleshoot. And you're going to have to figure out how the material acts as it's extruding and all that stuff, what to look for. And whether it's high flow or, you know, low flow, the overarching principles are going to be the same. And so starting, you know, in that budget phase, I think is important.
Yeah. So to me, everyone working on prosthetics should get a $200 machine just to play with it. And everyone should have mesh mixer, and everyone should try out these free scanning tools. I think everyone. I don't care if you hate it, if you think it's the worst thing in the world. You should find out if this is for you. You should find out what it works. You should find out if this is a threat or an opportunity. Or you should find out if something you can outsource this to somebody and just do it. You know, this is just something that's going to happen. Now, when we get into spending $50K, you know, to me, the herd thins. To me, it's like people making a decision. Also, because there isn't that much around for $10K, you know. I think they're really, you know, I would recommend somebody getting the cheap machine, and I would recommend if you have enough volume to get the filament innovation, but you're right. But then we all of a sudden we go from like everybody in the market to maybe a few, right? Or
yeah,
would you not agree? I mean, do you think it's much bigger?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that in a lot of places, that's a mistake. You know, I think these, you know, it's not too long ago that people were spending $60,000 for that Pohemus Scorpion scanner that was, you know, in the early 2000s laser scanner, still a great scanner. And they were spending over $100,000 for a machine to carve foam. And then, so this idea of even spending $30,000 to $50,000, you're still almost $100,000 less to have a solution that can do these test sockets for less money. And I think people forget about that. You know, they may see that these machines, oh man, $30,000 is a lot of money. Well, yes, it is a lot of money. But these are tools, professional tools that allow you to do a job for a professional leg maker. And I think that's really where the dividing line starts, is what is the value of your time, and are you going to invest in professional tools? And so I think that's also important for people to step back and say, hey, is it an investment worth looking at? Because in the grand scheme of things, your return on investment, especially with the volume, you're going to be able to pay the machine off, you know, whether it's $30,000, $20,000 to $30,000, pretty quickly. Now, with all that being said, there is still massive white space in that $10,000 and under space.
Totally. And what you can do then is, of course, you could start outsourcing some check sockets first, see if that works, because you're going to be paying a lot more for those, but that's, of course, no CapEx, no investment. That's just, you send it off. So I think, and there is a, you know, if you only do very few of these, then of course this outsourcing thing totally makes sense. Or if you're time constrained, space constrained, you know, if you have, and I think it's also who you are, right? If you're all about the client, want to spend as much time in front of the client, and don't care as much about the engineering portion or this repetitive production portion, then, well, maybe you should just be maximizing your time in front of clients and working with them and minimizing your time making stuff.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's what's interesting about this new generation of clinicians, is their tolerance for the late, you know, late night work in the lab or the shop or whatever, where you're staying up till, you know, 10, 11 o'clock modifying plaster molds, you know, that's not them. They are looking for a way to, and I know work-life balance is kind of a buzz thing, but they're looking at a way of, how do I integrate, still getting great patient outcomes, but how do I maximize the amount of time that I'm not working as well? And I think this is where the idea of outsourcing really can come into play, because it is a great, even though you're paying money for it, you're getting a professional product that's ready to go without your hands being in it as much. And so I think it is a very interesting option for this kind of new generation of clinicians. And it's not unlike the dentistry field. You know, those dentists are not making their crowns by hand with the patient there. They're either outsourcing them, or they have some sort of robot making them. And they're there to evaluate, make sure the patient gets the right crown, and they also are fitting it. But how it's fabricated, I don't think many of those dentists could care less.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. And I think, and just how your attitude is about this, and if you see this as a cost saving, or if you see this as a time saver, or if you see this as like the future of everything, you know? And how about scanning? Would you, you know, we're talking about these free tools, like you can get an iNScan, or you can get, you know, way, you can get an Artec, EVA, whatever. Like, when would you, you know, say, hey, you know what, invest in that better scanner, or really up your game in scanning? What does that depend on?
Yeah, so I mean, iNScan makes some great scanners. They make the iNStar scanner, which is a sub-$1,000 scanner. So there's really even no reason not to have one of those on site. It's actually one of our workhorses that's in our one of the offices for East Point is the iNStar scanner, and it's really amazing. And they keep on doing better and better with the software, and which helps the hardware perform much better. The reason why you would go to a more expensive scanner is not only for the resolution, but a lot of times people still like to do a kind of a hybrid way of evaluating the patient. So they'll take a cast, and then they will scan the inside of the cast. And a lot of scanners struggle to do that. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why I really like the Artec scanners, is they do just an amazing job capturing the inside of those casts. As long as you have line of sight, you can capture the inside. And so I think it's neat. But you're talking about, you know, a $900 scanner for the iNStar to a $20,000 with the Artec EVA. But if that $20,000 scanner does everything that you need to do, including getting all the stuff on the inside of your casts and such, it's definitely a professional tool that will age well. The hardware ages very well. It's the software that continually gets upgraded, and it's just a great option for people. But yeah, to reiterate, I mean, so that you've got your iPhone scanners that are probably, you know, $500 to $700, $750 a year annually, and then you have an iNStar scanner, which is under sub-$1,000, and it's a perpetual license with the iNStar. And then there's the iNScan H, which is kind of around a $5,000 level, and then they have the iNScan H Pro, which I think is just sub-$10. Peel, which is kind of the consumer version of Creaform, they also have a Peel 3 that's out, which is very interesting, sub-$10,000. But then the jumps get pretty big. You jump from that to like an Artec EVA, which is around $20,000. And then if you want to get the EVA without the wires, which is called the Artec Leo,
amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You should get the Leo.
Yeah. So what you're talking like $30,000-$35,000. But you know, that is a tool that not only will last a long time, but it is an amazing tool. So there's plenty of tools.
Using that was the most space age thing I've ever done, dude. I love it.
Really?
Thing. Yeah. And that's also, cool. But the only thing with it is that it's like you're holding a Toyota Camry in your hand. So I was always really worried about dropping it. Like, that's the only thing.
Yeah.
But it's super amazing. But, and for who would you recommend that to people though? Cause I think it's amazing. And it really, but to me, it saves you a lot of time in the workflow. I thought the digital part of that and cleaning up and all that was, and ensuring that kind of got this like auto wizard thing that really makes it easy to know where you've scanned and stuff. To me, that saves you time on the back end, like the cleaning up part. That's where I think the you could win time on that. But it's still, that seems like a big outlay for someone to take, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Artec Studio for the Artec EVA and the Leo and the Spider, for that matter, is probably the most powerful scanning software out there. But the reality is that the iNScan software, it creates beautiful watertight meshes pretty much instantly without the need to register, think things together and align the scans and all that stuff. So if you're talking about speed, then the iNScan probably would win definitely hands down in a head-to-head. But if you're talking about just beautiful scans and like super clean, then the Artec Studio stuff is going to win hands down. And then, you know, and then you've got the crazy stuff that's the $60,000-$70,000 Creaform black scan or handy scan black or whatever. And that is amazing. But you talk about overkill for the orthotic and prosthetic industry. I don't see a real need for that unless you just have just money to burn.
Okay, that's good advice. So, hey guys, so I thought, thanks a lot, Brent. I think this was really helpful.
Yeah, no, I think this is great. You know, we've always wanted to do something of, hey, where to start. And hopefully this gives some people some idea of, here are some next steps, tangible next steps that I can take.
Yeah, perfect. And I think if people are enthusiastic about this, let us know in the comments or something, or email us or something like that, because we can go a little bit deeper. I think there's a lot more software. There's a lot more kind of maybe space related. Like, I mean, like you know, what kind of tools and stuff you need. We can go a little bit deeper now if you want. So let us know if this is of interest and you want us to go a little bit deeper. I thought there's some really handy tips here, some really handy things to think about and know about. So thank you very much for being here, Brent, today. And thank you for listening. This is another edition of the Prosthetics and Orthotics podcast. And you have a great day.